Hello, this is episode number 35 of Tech Policy Weekly from the Technology Liberation Front for Thursday, February 7th, 2008. I'm your host, Adam Thier of the Progress and Freedom Foundation. After a long hiatus, we're back with our first show of the year, but on today's show, we're going to actually be discussing an issue we've touched on in previous shows and which continues to generate intense debate in technology policy circles. That is, we'll be discussing whether America needs a national broadband policy and whether so-called net neutrality principles should be part of such a plan. Related to that, we'll once again discuss which sort of business models broadband providers should be able to use when trying to balance consumer demands and efficient network management policies, since that's been at the heart of ongoing net neutrality policy debates. Joining me for today's discussion are two of our regular contributors to the TLF, Tim Lee of the Cato Institute. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Adam.
And Jerry Brito of the Mercatus Center. Hi, Jerry.
Hello, Adam.
We're also pleased today to be joined by two very special guests. First, I'm pleased to welcome Matt Sherman to the show. Matt's a technology blogger and a web developer who lives in the San Francisco Bay Area. He has particular interest in broadband markets and the role of government, and he blogs over at richversusreach.com. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Adam.
And we're also joined today by George O, who is the technical director of ZDNet and is a former IT consultant specializing in internet engineering and IT infrastructure and architecture issues. Welcome to the show, George.
Hi, Adam.
Matt Sherman, I want to ask you to kick off today's discussion since you made an interesting post on your blog last week responding to an Ars Technica article about the supposed need for a national broadband policy, and which also seemed to imply that a new national regulatory policy was needed to spawn additional broadband business models. Matt, tell us a bit about your response to that article and why you thought the call for a national broadband policy was misguided.
Well, sure, and I would say that ours is certainly not the first to make such a suggestion. I just think there are some things being missed. It's easy to say that we need a national broadband policy, but what people seem to miss is that we actually have multiple national broadband policies. One of which is being carried out by Verizon, for example. What they're doing is called fiber to the home. AT&T is doing fiber to the node. Sprint is doing WiMAX, and Comcast and the cable companies are doing something called DOCSIS 3.0. So, in fact, I don't think we lack for a national broadband policy. I just think we lack for a government-run broadband policy. I think we have numerous strategies that are running in parallel and are running competitively, and I think that's quite a good state of affairs, frankly.
Do you think that a national broadband policy, if it included something along the lines of net neutrality mandates, would interfere with that process in terms of the flourishing of broadband models?
I think there's a great risk of that, yes. I think for a number of reasons, both technological and economic. On a technological level, you know, what I love about the internet and what I love about the technology world in general is that every possibility is tried and every possibility is tested on its own merits. And what national policies tend to do, and net neutrality is an example of that, what such national policies tend to do is pick winners and losers. They try to predetermine architectures or approaches that are optimal. And unfortunately, that premise as to whether these things are optimal, it tends to be untested compared to real-world technology. So I would much rather things like net neutrality or desirable network architectures be the result of a competitive market and be the result of technologists really trying things out and seeing how they work.
Okay. George Joe, let me bring you into the discussion now to ask you to elaborate on some of that. Over at ZDNet, you have written extensively about network management issues and commented on some of the hotly debated public policy issues of the day, especially in an essay you penned last November on the subject called A Rational Debate on Comcast Traffic Management, which is something we've talked about on a previous podcast. Tell us, George, what do you make of what's going on in Washington right now in terms of potential FCC oversight or regulation of broadband network management policies?
Well, I think it's definitely good that the FCC is looking at it. I mean, I think at least the people at the FCC are rational people, and they're going to look at the issues on a factual basis. Myself and Richard Bennett, who's been on the show before, we were at the Net Neutrality Summit last Saturday, or the Saturday before this last Saturday, and we had a debate with Tim Wu, We had a debate with Tim Wu and a few other net neutrality supporters. What was the surprise to us is that they continuously stood up and made statements that were just simply not true. They continuously stated that Comcast blocks download, Comcast blocked downloads, Comcast blocked downloads over and over again. And until Richard Bennett pointed out that Comcast does not block downloads, not a single person stood up and apologized. They just continue to say these things. Tim Wu, who's the self-declared father of net neutrality, says that he doesn't think that the legislation is important. And he says he doesn't really want to talk about the actual detailed legislation during the debate. And I pointed out that, Tim, you said that the Democrats had better pass net neutrality legislation like they promised on YouTube. And then he looked at me and he says, I support net neutrality legislation, but the legislation is not really important. It's how we feel about it that's important. So, you know, that's the level of debate that we have. Nobody really wants to actually debate the legislation.
I think there is some confusion when we talk about net neutrality. Certainly on a technical level, there are many interpretations in terms of what that means. But I think the very important point that George is making is that when I talk about net neutrality, what I'm talking about is the possibility of legislation. And so I think it's important to get people who advocate net neutrality to actually clarify, are they talking about this outcome, this sort of network architecture outcome that they find desirable, which is fine, or are they actually talking about enforcing this sort of thing by law?
Yeah, that's a good point. And George, that's something that you talked about in your last piece on this, that some of the proponents of network neutrality policies or regulations, such as the Save the Internet Coalition, have been, quote, asking the FCC for things that they don't fully understand what they're asking for, you said on your blog. I mean, what do you mean by that? Do you feel that some of these groups are potentially in over their head or asking for sort of technical management policies that, you know, we don't quite know what the consequences will be for the Internet?
Yes, I will answer that. But let me just clarify what I meant by what I was talking about the policy. When I talk about net neutrality, I am talking about the very policy that these people are fighting tooth and nail for in Washington Hill, and then they turn around and say that they don't really care about it and they don't really want to talk about it when you want to debate them on the issue. The actual policy, I call it net stupidity, because they want to ban the sale. They want to ban the sale of quality of service. Now, it's a really disingenuous argument. They tell you, well, we don't want to ban QoS, but you don't really need QoS because, you know, we think we know better how to engineer networks. We think you don't need QoS, but we're not really going to ban QoS, right? But the legislation doesn't say it bans QoS. The legislation says you can't charge for QoS. So if you can't charge for something, you're essentially banning it. So that's one thing. The thing that you asked me about the people asking for things they don't quite fully understand, for example, the EFF, the Free Press, Public Knowledge are all asking for metered internet service, every single one of them. You go look at their requests to the FCC, you go look at what the EFF posts on their website. I wrote a post called EFF wants to saddle us with metered internet service. The EFF actually gives you examples of how great the Australian system is, where they have a 4 gigabyte or 1 gigabyte or, you know, midnight cap during the day peak hours and the off peak hours, where you can only download a few gigabytes a month. And if you go over that, the charges are outrageous, you know, a couple of dollars per gigabyte. So, I think Matt Sherman wrote this really good piece where he elaborated on the end game of Time Warner, where, you know, since it costs you $30 to download a movie now, you know, the carriers can basically say, well, you know what, Apple, I'll tell you what, you know, you give us $2 per download and we'll let your downloads go through without incurring any charges on the client. So essentially what you have is you have exactly what Ed Whitaker saying, you won't use my pipes for free. You have that becoming a reality now based on what the EFF, what the Free Press, and what Public Knowledge is asking for, which is metered internet service.
Well, but just to clarify, and then Matt, you can expand upon this, that might not be the only thing they're asking for. Of course, metered internet service would be one thing, and in fact, that would be a different type of business model, and we could debate the merits of it. But they're asking more broadly for the FCC to have authority to potentially impose or restrict various types of business models. Isn't that not correct, Matt Sherman?
That is, as I understand, much of the legislation, yes, and perhaps the goals of various neutrality advocates. And again, I don't have any problem with net neutrality as an outcome or as a consumer good, if you will. But trying to mandate it, I think, really forecloses a lot of possibilities. I think metered internet may be a perfectly fine outcome. You know, on its face, as I look at it, I don't really have a problem with metered internet so long as the consumer is happy and so long as it's a reasonable offer. But the idea that the FCC would require metered internet or tip the scales in a regulatory way towards metered pricing or against metered pricing, those are the things that really bother me because it really sort of, as I said, it sort of forecloses possibilities. It forces architectures and economic models on the internet which, you know, haven't been determined yet.
Good point. I want to come back to that, but I want to first bring in Jerry and Tim, and specifically I'll start with Jerry and ask him to maybe just tell us a little bit about what's happening right now at the FCC regarding Comcast and a proceeding that's open there right now in which comments are due on as early as, I guess, next week. Jerry, you want to fill us in on that?
Sure. Well, when we left this saga, the FCC has solicited comments to a notice of inquiry on net neutrality. This is pretty much a prelude to rulemaking. It's saying we're not sure if we want to issue rules on net neutrality or not, so this isn't a notice of rulemaking, but we're soliciting your input on whether we need to be thinking about starting a rule, rulemaking. And so they issued a notice of inquiry, and folks submitted comments, and that comment period ended. After that comment period ended, the kerfuffle with Comcast occurred. And so that was never taken into account, and there hasn't been a new period to comment on that. What has happened is that the FCC has sent a letter of inquiry to Comcast, basically asking Comcast to explain themselves and opening up an investigation. And there have also been some groups who have filed a petition asking the FCC to open an investigation and fine Comcast. What is interesting to me, though, is that I'm not sure what they're basing themselves on, what law they're basing, what rule they're basing themselves on. You have the Internet Policy Statement, which outlined some principles of net neutrality that the FCC issued a while back, but that's not binding. It's basically just a statement of what the FCC would like to see occur on the Internet, but it's not a binding rule. So a lot of folks point to the Madison River case, which was a case where there was a phone company that blocked VoIP applications, and that was settled. The FCC opened up an investigation, found out what they were doing wasn't right, and settled with them. The problem with it is it's not precedential. It was a settlement. It was never adjudicated, and it was a phone company that was subject to common carrier regulations. So it's not really different. So I don't know, even if the FCC does an investigation, what rule they're going to be applying here.
That's a good point. One thing we should point out is that there are some questions on the table about will Comcast be at a minimum required or other broadband providers be at a minimum required to disclose more about their policies governing network management operations or principles. And there's been a lot of talk about transparency and disclosure with regards to network policies such that perhaps the FCC would not forbid these things. And again, Jerry, you're right. Who knows what law we're talking about they're doing this under. But maybe they would just require some sort of principle that says you got to at least inform your consumers about what you're doing. But Richard Bennett on our previous podcast made the point that if you require all broadband operators to be disclosing everything they're trying to do or giving away their network management playbook, there is a potential that you're making it even easier for people to defeat any kind of system you put in place to manage traffic.
And, I think that's where the fine line is going to be is where do you draw the line in disclosure? Because you can go to one extreme and just say, we do network management, period. Right. And so that's disclosure. But then the other line is, or the other side, the other extreme would be to say exactly what you're doing, which would help folks overcome those network management techniques.
Right.
And Comcast, I think, wasn't disclosing enough, I don't think, before the kerfuffle there. But they seem to have now, I really haven't taken the time to look too closely, but they have on their website added some pages that explain what their network management practices are. So it'd be interesting to see if that's going to satisfy anybody.
And it seems to me seems to me the most savvy thing Comcast could do here would be to disclose as much as possible, because if they don't, it seems to me they would get themselves possibly in regulatory trouble.
Right.
Comcast, they're saying that they're falling into reasonable network management practices, and the disclosure is already in their terms of condition, as Richard Bennett has pointed out, that Comcast says you can't have servers, and the only thing that they throttle right now is BitTorrent seeding, which is a dedicated server mode of BitTorrent, and they're not really blocking it. They're simply saying, well, on busy times of the day, we're just going to peel it back a little bit so that the gross offenders and the people that are using the most upstream bandwidth are going to be slowed down.
I don't quite agree with that. I mean, I think that as internet applications get more sophisticated, the distinction between clients and servers becomes more tenuous. And so certainly, I don't necessarily have a problem with an ISP saying you can't use servers, but I don't think saying our policy is no servers is very much disclosure, because there are lots of gray areas, of which peer-to-peer applications like BitTorrent is one, where it's not a server in the traditional sense of, you're serving your files to a lot of other people. It's peer-to-peer in the sense that the traffic is two-way. And,
well, you are serving to a lot of other people.
But you're also receiving from a lot of other people. I mean, it's a many-to-many relationship rather than a one-to-many relationship.
Not when you're in seeding mode. You're only serving when you're in serving. When you're in seeding mode, you are only serving, and that is covered under their terms of usage.
Well, that's true. But,
can we get a little more specific about that point? And actually, because George's is important, I think, and you were describing it. When we talk about the seeding issue and what Comcast is doing, it's my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, they're using packet resets to essentially delay the transmission on the upload of certain seeds it does not – get into that a little bit about the specifics
They're killing the transmission temporarily. They're not delaying it. They're killing it, and the application will try again later on when it's not so busy, and it won't get killed. So I mean, they are effectively delaying it. I mean, they are killing the packets. When we were at the net neutrality debate, we had this one guy describing it as someone killing his 2-year-old son. And it's got or someone telling you that your wife is dead. And it's just gotten so emotional that, guys, we're talking about packets. We're not talking about people's children. We're not talking about people's wives. We're talking about people's packets being shot down. And the thing is, like Richard Bennett pointed out, that there is research right now that shows that as few as 10 people can basically bring down an entire network in an entire neighborhood for a DOCSIS or cable 1.0 DOCSIS 1.0 network. And it's like the solution that's proposed by the EFF, Free Press, and Public Knowledge. They're saying that they should have used dynamic throttling, some sort of dynamic throttling. And the problem is that dynamic throttling just simply – there is no dynamic throttling mechanism in those modems right now. So they're asking for a solution that doesn't exist right now. And if it does exist, they're going to have to spend money to upgrade to it.
So George or Matt, let me ask you this question, because this really gets to the heart of the matter with the debate that's going on right now. If Comcast, or any broadband provider for that matter, was forbidden from engaging in activities like packet resets or various types of deep packet inspection or whatever other type of traffic shaping technologies or efforts we're talking about, what would the net result of that sort of a net neutrality mandate be on traffic flows or internet activities? Matt, why don't you jump in first there?
Well, that's a great question, and I think the first thing we need to look at here is the law of unintended consequences, actually. Because the thing that comes to mind for me when we talk about net neutrality legislation as a matter of law is we have to ask what happens the first time somebody files a net neutrality lawsuit. Either an organization or a person that is unhappy with their service and they feel that they're not being treated fairly under net neutrality, well, what's the first thing that happens? Well, the first thing that happens is that ISP's records are now open to the government, basically, whereas they weren't before. And that includes things like routing tables and traffic policies and all that sort of thing. So as far as one possible unintended consequence of all this is a great, great what's the word I'm looking for, a great encroachment by government into, you know, very low-level network management. And I know that the net neutrality advocates don't intend that, and in fact, they probably wish for precisely the opposite. But new laws like this are essentially new doorways from the government into networks.
And George, could you answer that question about specifically what it would mean for network management and internet traffic in general if certain types of procedures like this were forbidden by the FCC?
Well, if you ban packet resets, you're just basically telling Comcast that they can't use one of the cheaper mechanisms, that they have to use a more expensive mechanism, and that in the end just simply raises prices for the consumers. And, you know, the EFF and the Free Press and Public Knowledge have already suggested that the better alternative is to go to metered internet service. So then the ISPs, I can see them just saying, you know, okay, all right, we'll just do what you tell us to do, and we'll use metered internet services, and then they just charge everybody more money.
Mm-hmm. Tim or Jerry, you want another question here?
George, I have a technical question for you. So resetting a connection, basically that's telling the server, you know, we never got the packet as intended, try again later. Is my understanding is correctly that peer-to-peer applications such as BitTorrent specifically ignore those and send the connection over and over?
No, this is happening at a lower level below the application layer, so the connection is actually shut down from beneath the BitTorrent application. So it does effectively kill that session, and it's a very effective way of only targeting those people who are using BitTorrent seeding. Now, bear in mind that people are saying that Comcast is not being responsible, and they're not uploading to the peer-to-peer network, and they're not pulling their fair share of uploads. And that's not true, because people who are downloading, they're still uploading. It's just that Comcast wants to be of minimal impact to their users. They want people to be able to download as fast as they can. They don't want to prevent you from uploading while you download, because if they prevent you from uploading while you download, you know, some people might not want to talk to you, and they may not want to trade files with you. So the only people that they want to target is the people who have already completed downloading their files, but they're just being, you know, they're just sharing extra bandwidth, and they want to take, and during the peak hours of the day, they want to say, we don't want to share that extra bandwidth for people who have already finished downloading their files. So they're specifically targeting those particular users at peak hours of the day.
And a lot of users don't know that once they have completed downloading a file that they're still sharing it a lot of times.
They may or may not know, and probably they don't know. I mean, people are told that you should leave the seed open for a long time as a courtesy to other users. And I think, I'm not saying what Comcast is doing is good. I mean, what they're doing is just because their network sucks. You know, so it's not something that they should be particularly proud of doing.
Right.
It's something that they're doing out of necessity because of the lack of bandwidth for the number of users that they shove onto this tiny little neighborhood where you have, you know, we've all seen those commercials with the web hog and people painting their houses, their neighbors' houses red or whatever. This is exactly what this is. I mean, it's a situation where they have too many users sharing the same pipe, and you don't have this problem with DSL. You definitely don't have this problem with Verizon Fios. So what we're seeing is not something that anybody should be proud of. It's just something that's an ugly necessity. And if you tell them that they can't do this, then you're basically going to shut their. You're going to make their network work horribly.
It's also worth keeping in mind that it's not that targeted. I mean, I think it was what was it? I think it was Lotus Notes traffic that they accidentally blocked.
They keep on, the EFF keeps on mentioning that's so bogus. The Lotus Notes thing was an accident. It was an accident, and they fixed that even before this whole thing got kicked off. They fixed that so long ago. It's just so frustrating when you hear people repeating that over and over again. That was a bug. They fixed it.
Well, sure, but still, I mean, when you're interfering with traffic like this, you're going to have bugs, and there may very well be other bugs that people haven't detected yet. And one of the costs, in a sense, what Comcast is doing is it's shifting. It's cheap for Comcast because they're just firing off these reset packets, but it can be expensive for users or for protocol designers if they screw up and send reset packets to something they weren't trying to, or they, you know, haven't fully thought through the consequences. It can be destructive.
Well, everything has bugs, and the point is they fixed it already. So, I mean, what else do you want? I mean, if there's a problem, I mean, everything has problems and consequences, and they fixed it. I mean, what's a bigger consequence is not doing anything about it and letting those users completely monopolize the upstream bandwidth and making it so that the entire network is not usable for everyone, and you basically have collision hell. And that really doesn't serve anyone.
Good point. Matt, any closing thoughts on this issue?
Well, ultimately, I mean, the solution to all these things is more robust networks and better competition. So, you know, when I hear conversations about what to do about broadband in this country, I mean, I tend to try to steer the conversations towards what can we do to increase robustness, have the right incentives, have the right economics, and have the best possible technologies in place, instead of looking at ways that we can regulate the existing players or limit their ability to do certain things. I think it's an easy conversation to have the latter, but I think it's a much more interesting conversation to have the former.
Well said. George, any closing thoughts?
I agree with Matt. Right now, Comcast is basically doing what they have to do to survive, and they are actually responding to the competition pressures from Verizon Fios. And they've already announced that 20% of their network is going to be DOCSIS 3.0, and that's going to increase upload speeds by a factor of 10, and it's going to increase download speeds by a factor of 4. So once that gets deployed, that certainly solves a lot of the problems. And you want them to spend their money on their DOCSIS 3.0 upgrades and not on these frivolous lawsuits and demands to do dynamic packet throttling or whatever.
Right. Great point. I think that's a good place to conclude. Well, that's going to do it for Tech Policy Weekly this week. I want to thank Matt Sherman, George Au, Tim Lee, and Jared Brito for joining me. And to read more commentary from the entire Technology Liberation Front gang, please visit us at techliberation.com. If you'd like to comment on the show, just go to techliberation.com/podcast and leave a comment on the page for this episode. If you like what you heard, please tell a friend. Please write a review of the show on iTunes, and don't forget to dig our podcast. Until next time, I'm Adam Thier. See you then.